We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this 17th day of August 2010, and this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me this morning is Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, listeners.
We have apologies from Phil York from Dads in Distress, so all those Phil York fans out there, hopefully he'll be back with us next week.
Get your Phil fix next week.
That's right. But it's a big week coming up. We're all immersed in the elections, and we have a couple of election items to raise with you. In a moment, we'll be speaking with Ed Dabrowski, and we'll also be speaking to more of the men's issues. We'll be speaking to Greg Milan, who's put out an A to Z guide, and we'll also be crossing over to Toronto, where we'll be speaking to Joseph Goldberg, a psychologist heavily involved with parental alienation. We had hoped to bring that interview last week, but with a few technical problems, we are going to get back to Joe this morning, and he'll be telling us all about a symposium that's going to be run in New York at the beginning of October. So, a packed program today. Ian, you've got something for us.
Well, I've got a few things here, obviously. With the election in full swing, the fruitcake raffle going on down in Canberra, as I call it. An article in the Sunday Telegraph by Simon Kearney, Blokes Do It Tough. This is Tony Abbott, the interview. Tony Abbott is worried about Aussie blokes, saying it is easy for men to lose their way and women are more capable of coping with the demands of modern life. Mr. Abbott, who is struggling to gain support from female voters, said he was concerned about how Australian men coped in modern society and thought that women were more resilient. I think it's quite easy for blokes to lose their way because I think hardwired into just about every bloke is this kind of hunter-warrior instinct. And in modern society, there aren't many outlets for the hunter-warrior instinct, he said. Even guys who find outlets through sport, when they're not playing sport, as we know, they get up to all sorts of not particularly edifying things. Most blokes in the modern world achieve manhood or realise manhood in work and family, and that's why unemployment is such a challenge to blokes. That's why family breakdown is such a challenge to blokes, because it undermines their sense of self. He said women felt less pressure to succeed against similar set markers. I suspect that women's sense of self may be more resilient, he said. Well, I would dispute that. I don't think it's so much their sense of self, but I think a man's sense of self is more determined by his family and his position in society or his job, whereas a woman's position is because she's a mother. I mean, it's her body, it's her physicality. She had the children, she's a mother. There's a lot to do with this in The Woman Racket by Steve Moxon, which I interviewed him, I think, last year, and I totally recommend that book. Everybody should get their hands on that. The Woman Racket by Steve Moxon, which does explain scientifically what the differences between men and women are. And Tony's hit upon some good points here. Family breakdown is such a challenge for blokes, and also why unemployment is such a challenge for blokes. He's outlined two things which definitely cause men to lose their self-esteem, and which are pretty much possibly amongst the major causes of male suicides, which of course are 4 out of 5 suicides in this country are male. Now, Bill, I believe we've got somebody on the line. Would you like to introduce our next guest, our first guest?
Yes, we've got Ed Dabrowski on the line. Ed has formed a coalition of men's and fathers groups called mensvote.com, and they've put together a voting guide, I guess you'd call it. Ed, are you there, Ed?
Yes, hello. Hello. That's exactly what it is. It's a checklist which shows how the parties, the major parties in this election, consider and treat men's issues. And it's meant to be a guide that people can look at and see immediately whether men's issues are at the forefront of policy for the various parties.
Yes, now I'm just looking at it here. I can see some of the topics might be, say, end discrimination, stop anti-male government advertising, and family first is a yes. Equal parenting is obviously a yes. National, I think, is a no. with a few question marks, but there's yes, no's, question marks for each party on each topic, as I see.
Yes. Where there's a question mark, we're not quite sure, or they're undeclared, or they have no policy in that area, so we're not sure. But where we've seen evidence that, for example, that the government is leaning towards a position but maybe hasn't publicly stated that position, we've either said a yes or a no to it with a question mark because there's a little bit of doubt. But I have to say that the first one, which is to protect children and stop the rollback of equal share parenting laws, there has been a lot in the media in the last year and a lot happening with family law, and a major push by the family law industry, and you could say the divorce industry for that matter, trying to roll back shared parenting, you know, which would be extremely harmful to children and parents, and particularly dads who struggle at the best of times. But the new information that I have to hand would suggest very strongly that should the Labor government be elected, that in the 2011 period, there will be changes to family law that will make shared parenting harder to achieve. So I've got enough information now on to suggest that that is a very, very likely possibility.
Well, that's a huge worry for everybody. And I noticed the Greens are also, they've got a no in that area. All the other parties are all saying that they will stop the rollback of equal shared parenting laws. So I guess you've got to hope that it wouldn't get through the Senate, even if it does get through the lower house.
Well, I think, you know, if we have the situation that is being talked about in the media a lot of having a Greens commandeered or controlled Senate and Labor in power, then many of the much of the social engineering, I guess, things like same-sex marriage, and I guess the push by gender feminists to marginalise men, and not really help families or children, but to advance women, but at the expense of men, when really what we should be doing is advancing men and women together, and in the perfect complementarity and symmetry that men and women have to each other. But if they do get into that position of power, you will start to see more of the social engineering. And it's borne out by the policies they have or the lack of policies. I think the Greens, in a recent survey or a recent checklist on values, Christian values, actually, I think it was a survey, refused to reply to most questions. I guess it's now more well known that the Greens do have quite a anti-church agenda and an anti-Christian agenda. They certainly have a same-sex marriage agenda. For anyone who knows the intrinsic benefits of marriage to children and the safety of children in a family home with a mother and a father and the beautiful balance of the mother and the father, would know that same-sex marriage is not the model that we should be promoting. It's not the optimum model. So this checklist argues that we should stop same-sex marriage. We should not allow it to go through. And the interesting thing about the Labor's platform on this is, though, even though Julia Gillard is saying publicly that the position of her party is that same-sex marriage will not proceed, in actual fact, that isn't the position of the Labor Party. The Labor Party in 2009, at their party conference, their national conference, they amended their platform and removed the words mother and father from their platform policy document and refer only to the Marriage Act. Now, that means that the Marriage Act could change, and then they would support whatever was changed in the Marriage Act, which is the back door into authorising and legislating same-sex marriage. So Labor are not being upfront about that issue, I'm afraid.
Yes, they're not being upfront about any of these major
issues. About many issues, yeah. They're not being upfront at all.
Now, Ed, for people to get the full checklist, that you've got a website, I believe.
The website is www.mensvote.com. That's mensvote.com. Even if they type in mensvote.com into their browser, it'll go straight to the website. And on the menu, it's very clear to see there's a men's vote checklist. And the checklist will appear. There's also a link so you can download the high-resolution version of the checklist. And I'll be adding some more links so that you know, you can download a smaller version or a black and white version, which might be better for some people's browsers. I just implore people to have a look at it to see what values are important to them, and compare that to the checklist, see if their party of choice is really supporting their values, and in particular the family values we at Men's Vote believe should be being promoted and preserved. I would say that over the years we've lost a lot of our institutions, and our standards generally and values generally have become more lax, as a general statement. But we know the areas that are problem areas, and we know what needs to happen to protect our children, and we've put our foot forward, and it's all there on the checklist.
Well, that's great. Let's get that information out there, and thank you very much for coming on the show, Ed. I know you're doing it under difficulties. I think the line's not too good and your throat's not too good, but we really appreciate you coming on, and let's hope that people understand what they're voting for when they go up to that election ballot on Saturday.
If I could make one last closing comment, I'll say to your listeners, if your listeners look at the checklist and feel very comfortable with it and are happy with it and would like to pass it on to their friends, please feel free to do that. And we'd like to get the word out. So if it appeals to you and you feel as strongly as we do, then please spread the word.
Okay, so just to remind everyone, that website is www.mensvote, one word, mensvote.com. All right, Ed, thanks again, once again, for coming on the show, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime in the future.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax. Take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. How can I try to explain? When I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go. time to make a change. Just sit down, take it slowly. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to go through. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. All the times that I've cried, keeping all the things I knew inside. It's hard, but it's harder to ignore it. If they were right, I'd agree. But it's them they know, not me. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 17th day of August 2010. And our next guest is Greg Milan, who is has just released a new book called Men's Health and Wellbeing, an A to Z Guide. And Greg has... You've been prominent in the men's movement for some time. Greg, are you there at the moment?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, Greg, you've just released this book. You obviously have a concern about male health, and I wonder how you could, if you could tell us a little bit how that developed.
Yeah, I've worked in the men's health area for 18 years now. Concerns about men's health? Of course I do. Australia and most of the developed world, men's health is very, very poor. We die 5 years earlier than women do in Australia. I'll just talk about Australia. And in every age group that you looked at across Australia, more males die than females do. So, yes, our health is pretty bad, and I've spent a long time working with men. And the book that I've written, The A to Z Guide to Men's Health and Wellbeing, is the first book of its kind ever in Australia, and it's the first book that's written by somebody who works in the area, so I think it was well overdue.
Yes, now, you've been spending these 18 years in developing and evaluating workshop programs, community events and resources, and I guess you felt that it was time to move into print to get the message out.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I do run a lot of programs for men and community events for men, but the other main thing I do in my business life is that I train people in how to deal with men. I train doctors, nurses, social workers and counsellors how to engage with men, because frankly, they don't know how to do that, and that's a huge part of the problem. So this book's got two purposes. One, any guy or a woman can buy this book, and there's information about how men can live healthier and happier lives. So it's for men first up, but the secondary market is for people who work in the area. It's quite a great handbook for people who work in the men's health field.
Yes. Now, the federal government has recently released for the first time a men's health policy. What do you think about that?
Look, I think it's great. It's the second men's health policy in the world. Ireland did it about 18 months or so ago. That was the first one in the world. This shows you how behind the eight ball men are. There's been state women's health policies in every state in Australia for 20 years. There's been one men's health policy in New South Wales of about 6 years ago, but never a national men's health policy. Look, the national men's health policy is great. It's a great document, and it's acknowledgement by a federal government that there's a major problem. But one of the things I'd just like to draw your listeners' attention to in the male health policy is the fact of what we've been saying for years. The fact that men's health in this country is bad is not in any way whatsoever the fault of men. It's the fault of the fact that we live in a country where the health, welfare and community sectors are not in the slightest bit men-friendly. And the federal government knows this now after having done a huge consultation for 18 months across Australia with a lot of people. One of the planks of the national male health policy is that the government is saying we must train our health workers up. We must make our health, welfare and community sectors men-friendly. we have to do that because that's actually the reason why men's health in this country is so bad.
Well, you say you just said then that it's not the fault of the men. So what do you think the causes of the poor health of men and boys really are?
Well, as I just said, the fact that you know, our services in this country, our health and our welfare and community services aren't men-friendly. Mm. Women know how to access them because women are there all the time with kids. They're very comfortable and with the health and welfare and community sectors. Men aren't. Men aren't at all. So we need to change. You know, a simple example, men work 9 to 5, most doctors open 9 to 5. There's an access problem. We need to change our health services to be open at times when men aren't at work. Like in Newcastle, where I live, we've had the GP after access service that's open from 5 till 9 p.m. It's not rocket science. It's used by a lot of men. That's the sort of after-hours service that the current Labor government is trying to put into place across Australia. Great idea. Though I might mention the opposition don't think it's a great idea. Yeah. The opposition for a long time don't actually get men's health, which is a bit of a worry. But that's just a thing of access. But the other thing is the stuff that works for us in Australia is doing men's health in the workplace programs, going to where men are in pubs and clubs and running men's health nights, going to sporting events, going to religious centres and places where men are. So it's about delivering health messages to men where they are, not harping on so much about trying to get them to the doctor. Men enjoy wanting information about their health. They're really interested in their health if we deliver those messages in an appropriate way.
That's so what it's about. You think with those messages getting out, men today are becoming more interested in the health and well-being?
Oh, yes, definitely. Mm. There's a generational change on, because I think men coming up now in their teenagers, 20s and 30s, are really concerned about their health because men's health is out there. It's something tangible. It's something they know about. There's a men's health week every year. It's certainly out there. And I think men overall are starting to realise that their health really matters. Often men put the health of women and children before themselves. You know, that's a natural kind of stoic, heroic, but a little bit silly thing to do, because if they get sick, and they're the main breadwinner, as they often are, the whole family suffers. Now, that's silly. Their health's just as important as women and kids, you know. So we have to, what we've been successful at, I think, in the last 10 years, colleagues of mine who work in the men's health area, is getting that message that men's health matters out there in the community to men, so that, you know, they know that they have to take better care of themselves.
Yes, and we're speaking with Greg Milan from Men's Health Services. Greg, I think we noticed the publicity that's given to breast cancer, which is a good thing, but there are a similar number of deaths from prostate cancer, which we never hear about, or very rarely, do we?
Well, yes, that's right. You know, yeah, prostate cancer, for example, yeah, I mean, that affects men, obviously, but also bowel cancer and also all cancers. One in two men in Australia in their lifetime are going to be affected by cancer. One in three women will be, but one in two men will be affected in some way by cancer. Now, that's a very high figure, but our treatments and early diagnosis and treatments means that people don't die of cancer as much as they used to, and they in fact live longer. So there's some good news attached to this. But you have to, you know, men have to remember that they have to be aware of certain things that change in their body, which could be early indicators of cancer, and they need to do something about it, and then their chances of success are better. Yes, obviously, a great deal of money goes into breast cancer. I'd like to see a lot of money go into prostate cancer, but also bowel cancer. You know, they're not, it's as if they're not, I don't know why, not interesting enough. Or something, I don't know why all that money goes to one particular cancer that women get, where it should actually be going to a whole lot of other cancers.
And is this one of the reasons why you wrote the A to Z guide?
Well, I, you know, there's information in there on cancer, but the A to Z guide, what I really like about it is the fact that it's not just all about cancer, gout, arthritis and physical things. There's chapters in there on how to communicate with your wife, your partner and your mates, how to be more emotionally fulfilled, the stuff on emotions, how to meditate, how to relax, how to reduce stress in your life. There's a whole range of things that aren't just physical, because I'm interested in physical, mental, psychological, emotional and spiritual health, and all of that stuff's in the book. There's some health checks for guys for different ages, which is essential sort of physical stuff, but there's a whole lot of information in there, like how to meditate. Guys don't know how to meditate. It's in the book. Or mindfulness, or yoga, any of those things. So it's a very, very wide and diverse number of chapters in the book where you get a whole lot of information and a whole lot of resources and websites of where to go for more info.
And do you go into the area of suicide prevention in the book?
Yeah, we do touch on that as well. Well, how we look at suicide prevention and how I've always thought it would be useful is that 5 men per day suicide in this country, and that's far, far too high. What's in the book is about how to recognise in the people around you that are close to you that someone could be having such issues in their life as they're contemplating suicide. It's about suicide prevention. We've got to teach people how to pick up those signs. If somebody says casually they're thinking of suicide, they normally mean it. It's not a joke. They normally mean it, and within 6 months they might do it. So we need to be really, really aware. We need to have training programs out there in the community, I'd say specifically for men and designed by men, to pick up suicide prevention hints. There are some programs out there now. There's not enough. We're not doing enough about training people how to pick up those things. If people could pick up the indicators of suicide in someone, that would really help prevent those suicides and bring those figures down. That's what we need to do.
Well, absolutely. We can't afford this number of men, losing this number of men every day, every year.
No. I mean, I'm sure that's not new. That figure might not be new to your listeners, I wouldn't think.
No, we mentioned quite often. In fact, I think our view is that the 5 a day is probably a bit optimistic. I think the real figure I've heard figures even as high as 12 a day.
Yeah, 12. Yeah.
And if we had 5 whales a day beach at Bondi, we'd do something about it. It'd be a public outrage. But
we're
losing 5 men per day and nobody seems to be too bothered.
Yes.
You know?
And do you notice a lot of difference between, say, married men and single men in these figures?
You mean in relationship to suicide?
Well, suicide health generally.
Oh, okay. The age group I worry about for suicide is probably 25 to 55, that age group. Now, in there, it's not all about, you know, people suicide for a whole wide range of reasons. But I get very concerned about single men. We've got a lot of services out there for families and kids. We sort of, fathering's a big issue. What if you're single? What if you don't have kids? Where do you fit in? Who cares about your health? So I really worry about single men. And there's a big group of single, limited income males in this country from 35 to 55. Who've received probably a basic education, went into blue-collar work, then those jobs dried up. So a lot of them are unemployed. Sometimes they live at home. They don't have a lot of money, and they spend a lot of time in pubs. That's the group I worry about. That's also the group, accidentally, who show up in high suicide figures. So the answer to your question is, yes, I am really worried about them. And I don't think we do enough in this country to care about single men. I think it's a real problem, and we've got to turn our thinking around on that one.
And I don't know if it's related or not, but there are a lot of pressure seems to be coming on men now to perform sexually. Do you think this is causing additional stress?
Oh, yeah definitely is. Yes, I think the world's, since, you know, over the last 3 decades, the world's become more sexualized. You know, sex, you know, this is a fairly sexually permissive country, and that's good. I think that's all good. But what's happened in there is the role of men. Suddenly men are expected to know all about sex. God knows where they learn that, by the way. All about sex and how to perform as a superstar every time they're in bed with anybody. Well, look, life's not like that, and men aren't built like that. Men, there's a lot of information on sexual performance in my book, and a lot of stuff about, you know, things to watch out for sexually, sexual functioning, and a whole lot of sexually transmitted disease, a whole lot of sexual health information for men in the book, because it's really important that men can get some basic information on sex. And the other thing is, they don't have to be, you know, good at it every time. I think there's a whole lot of pressure on men to perform sexually all the time, and I would think more pressure on men than there are on women to perform sexually, you know. And men don't get a lot of information about sex as they grow up. Where do they get that from, you know? So I think they need some reassurance and some support that what they're doing is probably just fine, and they don't have to be, you know, champions at it. I think that whole sexual performance area is a huge one. You know, the emphasis is on men. As I say, I run a sexual health program. As I say to men, you can fake an orgasm, you can't fake an erection. No, you can't. Think about it.
It's true.
That's true.
Yeah. You mentioned that's one of the stresses on men today. What other stresses do you see that, and perhaps how could men be handling them better?
Well, there's a couple of things. I think there's two things. One is the changing role of men since the 60s and 70s. The role of men in our country and in the world's changed. And for a lot of men, that produces, you know, some uncertainty about their role in the world anymore as they grow older and they become fathers and their role changes. Maybe they're not working, maybe the woman in the house is working, that's fine, but what does that mean for them? A lot of men have some difficulties around finding their role in the world again. The other sort of general stresses on both men and women, if you looked at mental health, there's three things that are going to affect blokes. That's depression, anxiety and stress. Again, all of these things are dealt with in the book, but the difference between men and women is that if women feel anxious or stressed or depressed, they do something about it. Men often don't. Men often don't do anything about it initially, or try and bluff it out by drinking more or hoping it'll pass away, you know, and not talking to other people about it. So that's the problem. Men need to realize that those things, depression and anxiety, are simple illnesses like diabetes and gout. Men often think that it's unmanly to be depressed or anxious or stressed, you know, and they'll be thought less of. You know, if I had diabetes, would anyone think I was unmanly? No. So why should anyone think if I had depression that that's some sort of weak, unmanly thing?
It's a bit of the old stiff upper lip carryover, I guess.
We need to change that. I've worked with men with depression for 10 years now, and I can tell you they're some of the strongest men I've ever met in my life. They're dealing with an illness, and they're doing a damn good job of it, and they're very strong. I've never met, you know, they're not weak men. And it's ridiculous to think, you know, that if you're struggling with your feelings around stress and depression, that you should be doing that on your own. You should actually be, you know, talking to someone about it.
Just to interrupt, a bit of personal experience here. I went to the doctor a few years ago after my marriage breakdown and said to him, I'm depressed. You know, what can you do for me? And he said, well, I can put you on drugs.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And he said, well, it ended up him saying, well, we'll just try to think happy thoughts.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, thank you. And I left. Yeah. And I thought, well, what a waste of half an hour that was sitting in the room, you know?
Yeah. Look, I've heard those stories before often. And often, you know, let me put it this way. A separation from somebody or having a relationship breakdown is a crisis in your life. It's a crisis that you'll get through. Clinical depression is an illness that comes on. It's not a crisis in your life. Like, yes, you'll feel depressed about a split up in a relationship, but it'll get better. And most times, it shouldn't be treated with antidepressant medication. Most times, I'm saying. But if a guy, you know, in that situation you gave, goes to the doctor and says, I've just split up in my relationship and I feel really depressed, too often doctors prescribe antidepressant medication at the drop of a hat, and here, have some Valium and you're drinking a bit more, yeah. So the guy goes home, has a mittful of medication and a bottle of scotch and could be dead in the morning.
Yeah, no, I definitely could have had the
scenario I've heard.
Yeah, all I had to do was say, yes, I want the drugs, and he would have prescribed me, who knows, you know, but I said no, so.
That's part of the problem. Good on you for saying no. because, you know, obviously you had some knowledge or were in control of that situation enough to say, no, I don't want the drugs. But often guys just, you know, take what they're given by the doctor. So, you know, that's a really good example of how we, you know, that what people who are going through that kind of a depression from a separation need is someone to talk to about it. They need some supportive counselling probably for a while, for maybe weeks or months, and that helps, you know, a great deal in dealing with the whole situation and the depression. They don't need drugs.
We're speaking
too often GPs want to write out a script, don't they?
Yeah, and we're speaking with Greg Milan from Men's Health Services. So, Greg, do you have any simple advice for men to stay healthy and fit?
Gee, everyone asks me for simple advice these days. Yeah, look,
buy the book.
We have a slogan. Yeah, a slogan that'll fit in with...
No, the simple advice is, I think, do a few things, like generally with physical health, make sure you're not overweight, and the way to do that is to run a tape measure around your waist and find out if you're overweight or not, and let that be your guide to what you're eating. Do a bit of exercise. The other thing, we need to keep moving. We spend too much time sitting down in front of the TV and the computer. Move around as much as you can. Do whatever sport you like that moves you around is important. And the third thing is, is to relax. Take some time out for yourself all the time in a week. Have some time where you're not doing anything for anyone else but you, and that'll reduce your stress levels. I think those three things are really important. And the other thing is to enjoy life. You know, health isn't just all about having a great body and being able to run, you know, a 10-kilometre race. It's actually about being happy. So I think the other bit of advice in there is, you know, we sometimes forget to focus on what makes us happy. You can do that by, at the end of the day, writing down two good things that happen. And you know what? You can write that down every day, because every day two good things really do happen in everybody's life. Mm. But we race around so much, forgetting about that. So I think that's my general advice to guys.
And the getting a bit of exercise, I guess it's really a case of regularity rather than spending, you know, 2 hours one day and then doing nothing for the rest of the week, I suppose.
Yeah, with exercise, guys often think, oh, God, I can't bloody exercise because they're asking me to do too much. What we're asking you to do is 40 minutes of regular exercise, like going for a walk, for 40 minutes four times a day. Four times a week. Mm-hmm. Four times a week. That's all we're asking you to do. That's moderate exercise. If you did that, that's the starting point. We're not asking you to go to the gym. We're not asking you to run a big race. We're not asking you to do any exercise that you don't like. Like I always say to guys, if you like swimming, swim. If you like walking, if you don't like running, don't run. You'll hate it. Find out what you like, what activity you like doing. Some men say, oh, I don't do any exercise. What do you do in a week? Oh, I spend 4 hours in the garden. 4 hours of gardening is enough exercise for about 3 or 4 days, you know. So often guys are doing exercise and not thinking of it as that. Any hard work in the garden is really, you know, quite moderate exercise. So we're not asking for a lot out of guys. We're just asking them to keep moving at a regular rate. And you're right, regular. You know, don't run a mile one day and think, oh, I've done the exercise for the week. it doesn't work that way.
And I suppose it's good to set little goals and then achieve the goals. You're going to get that personal satisfaction, aren't you?
Well, yeah. If people are serious about exercise, I always get them to think about laying out a plan for the week and saying, look, these 3 days I'm going to do exercise. I don't have to do it for 7 days a week, but these three I am. And plotting it and writing it down so they can see that they're doing it. And that's actually a motivation tool for people to keep up doing exercise. The other thing is find someone else to do it with or do it in a group, because I think it's hard to exercise on your own. You know, it's easier if you've got someone you can go walking with or swimming with or running with, you know. That helps too.
And that would help just with the social interaction as well, going back to the single men concern you raised earlier.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, well, look, this is fascinating, Greg, and you have a free e-bulletin, I understand?
Yes, I put out email, E-M-A-L-E, goes out every month across Australia. It's a very widely distributed free e-bulletin that's got information on health and articles and events and all sorts of things like that.
So should they go to your website to...
Yeah, if people want to get that free bulletin every month, or if they want to order the book online, they can just go to my website, which is www.menshealthservices, all one word, menshealthservices.com.au. The book is in bookshops around Australia, but if you can't get it in your local area, you can get it online if you go to the website.
Do you know what it's retailing at, Greg?
$34.95.
Well, that sounds like a very good investment. I wouldn't...
Look, price of a good bottle of red or two packets of cigarettes.
Yes,
buy the book.
I think so.
Two packets of cigarettes, all right.
Probably pay for about 15 minutes with a consultant, so I think that's another way of looking at it. So, and the book, again, is called Men's Health and Wellbeing, an A to Z Guide.
That's right.
So,
yep.
Look, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to having a look at it because all those topics you've raised today all sound very interesting and very topical.
Thanks very much for having me on your program. I'm an admirer of your program and the work that you do on Dads on the Air.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say, Greg. And so, look, we've been speaking with Greg Milan from the Men's Health Services. Greg, thank you for coming on the program, and we wish you all the very best with your new book.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Welcome back to Dads on the Air this 17th day of August 2010. And our next guest is Joseph Goldberg from Goldberg & Associates. Joe is the principal of Goldberg & Associates, a psychologist who is also the founder of the Canadian Parental Alienation Symposium. So, Joe, are you there?
I am, Bill. Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thank you. And it's great to be talking to you. Now you've got this symposium coming up on the 2nd and 3rd of October in New York, and I see you've got a very impressive range of speakers. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about the areas you'll be covering, the speakers at the symposium.
Well, the theme of the conference is parental alienation syndrome, past, present, and future. And we chose that topic in part because the American Psychiatric Association is now considering parental alienation disorder for inclusion in the DSM-5. And for those that may not know what that means, the DSM-5 is
like a Bible, isn't it?
It's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is published and revised approximately every 20 years by the American Psychiatric Association. So that is the theme of the conference, and we're very excited about a lineup of 10 of the very best experts in the field of parental alienation at the conference.
Yes, I mean, it is so important that that parental alienation does make the mark this time because, as you say, it might be 20 years before we get another shot at it. And in Australia in particular, we suffer in that parental alienation is not really recognised by the professionals and therefore by the court. So it would certainly give it a kick along if it was recognised in that, you know, in that DSM.
Well, that's true. It may not be a recognized diagnostic condition, but I think that most mental health professionals, acknowledge that parental alienation is very real, and I think even in most family law courts today, I think judges are quite aware that parental alienation is a very serious form of child abuse.
Yes, it's in saying that it's not recognised by a lot of the professionals in Australia, it's not to say it's not happening here. It's all over the place, and it just amazes me that so many of the psychologists seem unaware, or if they are aware of it, they want to argue as to whether it's a syndrome or not. So, I think this conference is very timely.
And it's a wonderful opportunity to recognize a problem that I think has been going on since the beginning of civilization. So finally having an opportunity to have it recognized by the APA is certainly a landmark in mental health history. Some other countries have already recognized it, such as Spain.
Yes, do you have a feeling for how, I know you are a PAS, Parental Alienation Syndrome Consultant, are there many consultants in North America working in this area?
Well, it's a very narrow subspecialty of psychology. There are a handful of people who are consultants, and I think it's very important, even for your listeners in Australia, to try to reach out to somebody that is willing to provide litigation support in their cases, because many family law lawyers really need an expert to help them present the case and to help a judge understand what type of intervention is needed.
Yes, and are these consultants all psychologists, or are there any with an attorney background?
Well, I think that the majority of the people that work as consultants are mental health professionals, and I myself have neither a legal or a mental health background. I think you erroneously introduced me as a psychologist, but that's okay, Bill. Lots of people make that mistake at first, but I think if people visit my website, which is parentalalienation.ca, they can get my full biography online.
Good. Well, I'm glad you've clarified that. Certainly, you've been working in this area, and I think you've suffered with from parental alienation yourself with your own relationship with your daughter, haven't you?
Well, it's a personal experience that I went through as a targeted parent, and that certainly. Is information that people can read about online. Again, if they visit my website, they can read my biography, my personal experience with it, and the work that I do as a consultant helping others today.
Yes, I haven't heard of what happened to you, happening in Australia, where there's this this home education that you had to fight against. But yes, if people go to the website, it's an extraordinary story, the Joe's fight to maintain contact with his children. No, Joe, coming back to the conference, you mentioned the lineup of speakers. I wonder if I think you might even have some audio clips that might be able to give our listeners a bit of a feel for what's going to be happening.
Well, thanks, Bill, for bringing that up again. I do have some selective audio clips from some of the speaker presentations which occurred last year. And I thought that what I might do is sort of give you a brief introduction to who the speaker is, and just very briefly a little something about what the audio clip is about. One of the ones that I selected is by a fellow Australian who now practices in Florida. His name is Dr. Glenn Ross Caddy. And what I'd like to do is play an audio clip of his presentation. It's about 2.5 minutes long, where he compares the child's condition of parental alienation to shared delusional disorder. So,
yes, please do.
What I'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll play that clip for you now. And then this should give your audience a bit of an opportunity to understand the severity of the problem. Here we go.
Thank you.
The work that I've done at the extreme end of alienation makes the process look far more the equivalent of shared delusional disorder, and the equivalent of mind control that you often see in extreme cults. In Guyana, 934 people were murdered, mostly by taking cyanide. And these included more than 230 children. And the cause of that event was fundamentally manned by the name of James Jones, Jim Jones. In San Francisco, 34 people died in the Heaven's Gates cult when they also took cyanide, wearing black clothing and each lying down to die. When I was involved in that case, one of the FBI special agents said to me, "You know, this is a case of one suicide and 33 murders." He was right. We've got a whole history. I mean, think about it. Heaven's Gate. People were committing suicide, truly believing in a profound religious delusion. That religious delusion was that Halley's Comet was coming, and in the tail of Halley's Comet was a vehicle that was going to take them to heaven. I don't think they got there, at least not through that mechanism. This morning we wake up and find out that a suicide bomber has blasted more than 50 people into non-existence, and a building collapses in Pakistan. In order to have that sort of deluded belief system, sometimes people get away with it because it's called religion, but mostly it's just plain crazy. What I'm going to talk about is the relationship between the delusional process and the ability of people to therefore justify alienation. The work that I...
So that was a clip from Dr. Glenn Caddy, whose presentation was on the similarity between shared delusional disorder and parental alienation.
Yes, it's fascinating hearing him talk about the cult mentality, because that is certainly my experience as well in this area of parental alienation. It is like a cult. It's people draw in close together, and everyone else is excluded. And there are so many similarities. They're killing the children, but there's so much damage being done to the children by that sort of cult mentality.
This is true, and also the treatment for someone that has shared delusional disorder is the same. Most effective treatment for helping a severely alienated child, and that is separating the child from the inducer of the alienation, or the inducer of the shared delusional disorder. So the method of helping the secondary patient is the same as it would be in shared delusional disorder.
Yes, and that's a call for the judge, isn't it? Once he recognizes that and accepts it, then that is really what he has to do to get over this condition.
Right. You know, there were other speakers at the conference which picked up on the theme of the cult analogy, and one of the other speakers, Bill, was Dr. Amy Baker. She's considered one of the foremost authorities in research on parental alienation. And I would like to play another clip of hers, which sort of dovetails into this topic of a cult analogy with parental alienation. Can I go ahead with that one?
Yes, I just might mention I'm reading her book at the moment called Adult Children of Parental Alienation Syndrome.
Exactly.
Lessons Learned and Implications for Prevention. So, yes, look, I've been a fan of Amy Baker's for a long time. And
she's been on this program a few times. We've interviewed her a couple of times, I think.
So, yeah, she's that's great that she's going to be at your conference. So, yes, we'd love to hear that clip.
Yeah, she'll be the keynote speaker for the evening program on October the 2nd. So here's a clip from Dr. Amy Baker.
I want to talk a little bit about cults. I sort of indicated that there's this analogy. Chapter 2 of my book is called The Cult of Parenthood. This is almost a spot-on, perfect analogy that alienating parents create a cult-like atmosphere. They use the same strategies that cult leaders use. I don't think they're reading books on how to be a cult leader. I think they just know intuitively how to emotionally manipulate their children, how to create dependency on them. That's the core of being in a cult, is you give all your, you give up your self-sufficiency, your independent thinking, your critical thinking, and you become wholly dependent on this other person, even when it goes against your own best interest, right? Every time I have to do this twice? Okay. The cult analogy is useful because the people that I interviewed felt like, gee, I'm the only person in the world who was so stupid, you know, to walk away from my loving dad and just because my horrible abusive mom told me to, right? And they had no way of talking about it. Now, hopefully with this conference, and maybe we'll get the word out about parental alienation, but until it's widely talked about, the cult analogy helps people understand, you know. And one of the things I say, I don't know if you read the Star newspaper article, but I gave this quote in there, you know. No adult wakes up and says, today's the day. I just decided I'm going to shave my head. I'm going to give away all my money. I'm going to cut off my friends and family and quit my job, move out of my home. I'm going to move into a commune. I'll probably not eat enough or get enough sleep. And I really want to stand in an airport for 15 hours a day selling flowers for nickels so some stranger can have a Mercedes. That's my life plan, right? Nobody says that, and yet it happens, right? Because the person's critical thinking skills are slowly eroded. Well, if it can happen to an adult who's going against their own best interest for a total stranger, it can certainly happen for a child with their own parent. And when you talk to alienated kids, it helps them understand how they made this decision, right? Because many, many, many people end up in cults. It's also helpful, I'm going to jump to point 3, because we know something about how people recover from cults. and we can apply that knowledge to alienated kids. Okay, and the truism of what we know about cults is leaving the cult is just the beginning of recovery. You do not say, gee, I was 18, and I moved into a cult for 10 years, and now I'm a 28-year-old adult with no life skills and no critical thinking skills and no ability to take care of myself. But I'm out of the cult, so it's all good. Right? It doesn't work like that. Leaving the cult is just the beginning. There's a whole recovery process.
Well, Bill, that's a clip on Dr. Amy Baker.
Yes, very interesting that she says, that she mentioned about the intuitive parental alienation practices, because I've recently seen a DVD put out by Dr. Richard Warshak, and it's amazing. Some of the language used by the alienated children is identical to the language used on the other side of the world in Australia by these alienated children. It does seem like it's an intuition.
Well, I think one of the symptoms that Dr. Gardner referred to in his criteria for parental alienation syndrome was borrowed scenarios.
Mm. Yes.
Where they pick up the language and they pick up the same theme of the alienating parent.
Yes, and the independent thinking, and it's you know, you list the various things that go towards it, and it just seems to be just have so many things in common with all these various victims. And I suppose you've got to remember that the child is a victim as much as the partner. It it's, it doesn't mean we've got to do something. We have to do something about it. We had Richard Warshak on the program about a month or so ago, and I understand hopefully his DVD might be available at the symposium. Do you know if there are any plans made for that as well?
For Dr. Warshak's DVD, the one
yes.
On Pluto?
That's the one.
Well, I met Dr. Warshak at the AFCC conference in June, which was in Denver, and what was interesting is that the AFCC, the Association Family Conciliation Courts, they have an annual conference, but the last time they did one on the topic of parental alienation was about 10 years ago, and the one that they had in June of this year was a reunion of the same topic. So that was a really amazing conference because Janet Johnston was there.
Yes.
And Dr. William Burnett, who submitted the proposal on parental alienation disorder to the task force members, also with Amy Baker on the panel at a plenary session, debated, you know, the importance of its inclusion. And it was really an amazing conference. I think all of the workshops and all of the sessions at that conference really were necessary, in part because there's been so much interest in parental alienation and trying to define it, trying to come up with the right interventions for these children. And I think that it's a dilemma for many mental health professionals who don't understand the problem, but all have a very great interest in wanting to know it better, especially in light of the fact that over 200,000 children in America every year are suffering from parental alienation. So there's a great need for mental health services in this area.
It's great to hear that there is all that interest, and I notice Dr. Burnett is the keynote speaker on the first day of the symposium.
Correct. He's going to be there, and, we have a terrific panel of speakers. There's going to be Dr. Terrence Campbell is going to be another keynote speaker on Sunday. For many people that don't know much about Dr. Terrence Campbell, he was one of the critics of Dr. Richard Gardner. They pretty much used to go at war with each other on this topic, and eventually ended up mending their fences and finding common ground on this topic over time. But it is a wonderful and important conference, and I hope perhaps maybe some people as far away as Australia will consider coming.
Yes, look, I'm sure they will. And for people in Australia who are interested in this problem, is there any way they might be able to obtain a video or a CD of the presentations?
Actually, there is a way for us to send a DVD of our conference from last year.
Yes.
The one that we had at the Metro Toronto Convention Center in 2009 was a three-day conference. We filmed every speaker presentation, and it ended up turning into a three-volume box set of nine DVDs. And this is an incredible product that would be beneficial not only to targeted parents that want to better understand parental alienation and obviously can't travel from there to New York to a conference, but they could share this information also with other family members. They could share this information with mental health professionals that they might be seeing for counseling or involved in conjoint counseling with their children, because many mental health professionals will certainly benefit from watching these DVDs and sharing them with their patients, as well as family law lawyers, this DVD has become a very important tool in educating professionals in both of these communities.
Look, that sounds great. So how could people in Australia get access to those DVDs?
Very easy. If anyone is interested in ordering that DVD, all they have to do is send an email to info@cspas.ca, and just make a request to obtain a copy of the DVD, and we'll send them all the information about it.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And so, look, that's great that would be available, and I imagine you would do something similar for the conference this year.
We are planning to film it. It's a shorter program, but it'll be going all day and all night on Saturday and Sunday. So there'll be a lot of new content and a lot of new information that was not presented last year, but that is... because in part there's so many new developments that are happening in this field, and people, you know, should make every effort to try to educate themselves to these developments.
Yes, and we're speaking with Joseph Goldberg, who's the founder of Canadian Symposium for Parental Alienation Syndrome and the founder of the principal of Goldberg and Associates. Has your advice as a consultant extended to any parents in Australia who are dealing with these issues?
I've worked with parents in a number of other countries, including Australia, and from my perspective in the work I do as a consultant, the important thing is to be able to work with their lawyer, as well as with the client in building the case and being able to present the argument in a very effective way, because these cases are very complex. They involve not only knowing what to say and do, but what not to say and do.
It's very, very complex, and I think, yes, certainly in Australia we need all the support we can get, because it's still not widely recognised, even though it is all over the place. Have you got any quick advice that you could give to parents that might be needing your help right now?
Well, I think that it's extremely important for targeted parents to find the right professionals to help them and to not give up, because in spite of any setbacks that there may be in trying to rescue their children from this very abusive environment that they're in. There are many opportunities for second chances and third chances, and you can't give up, because once you know about the problem, giving up would be the equivalent of medical neglect. These are children that are in situations where they need this targeted parent very much, even though they can't express it. The psychological literature validates that even adult victims of parental alienation never wanted the targeted parent to give up on them or to go away. And there are solutions. There are legal solutions for interventions, and even if you don't succeed the first time, you have to do the best that you can to try to mount a second effort. It will require a judge to intervene in these cases, because an alienating parent, if they're an active alienator or an obsessed alienator, as opposed to a naive one, they are not going to stop. They're going to continue. And it's very important to be able to surround yourself with the right legal professionals and the right consultants to give you an opportunity to change that for the child.
Yes, you mentioned those three categories. The naive target, I suppose, probably a high majority of separations lead to that naive targeting. And then you have the active, and then the really difficult ones are the obsessed ones.
Right.
Now, with the obsessed alienation situations, you mentioned yesterday you have to keep fighting and keep fighting. But do you ever reach a point where you think, look, I'm doing more harm than good by continuing this fight to see the child?
Well, there are situations when, you know, a targeted parent could cause harm to the child by not knowing when it's right to back away. And in part, what I'm referring to is what's known as splitting. That's where you have a child that, when they're standing around the alienating parent, they're going to say all the things that that parent wants to hear, such as they don't want to go with the other parent, they don't want to talk to the other parent. But when the child goes with that parent, and they're with them away from the alienator, then the child's behavior changes, and they have a good time, they forget about all the things that they were saying before, and they can even show affection to the alienated parent. And so a child could fall into what's called splitting, and that could be harmful to a child, and that's why it's important to have a consultant that sort of helps the alienated parent understand when to push and when to pull back.
Yes, I think we're running out of time, Joe Goldberg, unfortunately, because it's such an interesting topic. But for people who want to get some more information about you and about the conference, where should they go?
Well, if they're interested in our conference, just visit the website, which is cspas.ca. And for information about my work as a consultant, my website is parentalalienation.ca.
That's great. So people got those websites. If they go to cspas.ca for the conference on the 2nd and 3rd of October in New York, and for Joseph Goldberg, well, I imagine if you just Googled your name, it'd probably come up anyway, wouldn't it?
Well, there's a good chance. If they put Joseph Goldberg in Google, they'll find me somewhere.
Yeah, sorry. Well, then, could you, just repeat again your website?
For my consulting practice is parentalalienation.ca.
Parentalalienation.ca.
Very simple.
Yep, that's great. All right, well, Joseph Goldberg, thank you very much for coming on the show, and we wish you all the very best for the conference in New York on 2-3 October, and we'll be very interested to see how it goes and to perhaps hear what some of the speakers have got to say.
Thank you so much, Bill. It was a pleasure being on your show.
That's fantastic. All right, we'll look forward to talking to you some stage in the future. Thanks again to Joe Goldberg.
Thank you, Bill. Bye for now.
Bye.
Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. One parent disappears by elimination through misinformation with lots of fabrication. Little brains are wired by constant stimulation against the other parent with great determination. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. No more expectation of parents' visitation. Nothing is now positive, only denigration. All attempted contact create a complication. Memories are erased with determined application. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. We don't see our children despite our protestation. The court will not act to help our situation. Dare to speak out, you invite recrimination, which destroys your reputation by nasty imputation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. This must be exposed, cause a revelation, and this is child abuse, a cruel abomination. The courts must stand up to save their reputation, eliminate this practice of parental alienation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this 17th day of August, 4 days out from the election. And just speaking about the election, I've got a good news story and a bad news story. The good news story is that in South Australia, the Department of Education is leading the way. They are rolling out children's centres across the state, and as part of this, they did a fatherhood engagement program. Ross Fairbank has written saying that he, on behalf of Men's Line, worked with these centres for 2 days, hearing stories of engagement and helping them formulate action plans. The only thing that was clear is that no other state is approaching fatherhood engagement on such a strategic and organised level across multiple government departments and NGOs. Exciting stuff. Now, on the other side of the coin is the Greens campaign for this election. And the Australian Greens have stated as one of their goals that women are to have equal access to appropriate, well-resourced education services from early childhood education through to higher education, which recognise the specific barriers women face in accessing education. You wonder how they could get it so wrong, because as I'm sure most people are aware, girls have for many years been doing much better than boys across the education spectrum, from early childhood right through to higher education. Yet the Greens women policy is still facing up to barriers that perhaps aren't even there. So we've had a number of election issues. We've got Ian's got something to tell us from our favourite hero rock guitarist.
Yes, well, I've recently just finished reading Eric Clapton's autobiography, and there's just a paragraph in here that I would like to share where he talks about his experiences as a father, which I think is particularly relevant. So I will just read from Eric Clapton's autobiography. At home, it was a period of settled domestic bliss for me and Malia, made even happier by the arrival of a second daughter, Ella May, born on the 14th of January 2003. I was now determined to stay at home and learn how to be a father. I honestly don't believe I could have been a proper father before. I just didn't have the wherewithal. It had taken 20 years of non-stop sobriety for me to acquire any kind of maturity and to be able to enjoy wearing the mantle and responsibility that parenthood requires. A lot of the time in my day-to-day relationship with the kids, I have had to learn to just stay in the background and support Malia. Malia, of course, is his wife, even if I don't agree with what's going on, because I have found on reflection that she is usually right, and also, being an only child, I have had very little experience of healthy family life. My wife's intuitive knowledge often astounds me, and in the occasional difficult family situation that arises, just being there and staying there is sometimes all that's required from me, and that in itself is a big one. I'll leave it at that. Eric Clapton on being a father.
So not just a guitarist.
No, and just being there. I like the way he lets them sort it out, but just the value of the father's presence. This is something which has been grossly overestimated by our society and the people in it for far too long. Just a father's presence. He doesn't have to say very much. He doesn't have to do very much. He just has to be there. That's what all you need from your dad. I thought Eric Clapton summed it up beautifully in that particular passage. Anyway.
And that's what the parental alienation is all about. So once again, we've been talking about the symposium coming up in New York on this very important topic. Looks like the music started. We're running out of time. So we'd just like to thank our guests from today, Greg Milan from Men's Health Services, who spoke about his new book, A to Z, and also Joseph Goldberg from Goldberg and Associates, who was speaking to us from Toronto about the conference coming up in New York. Now, don't forget, if you want to listen to this show again, it'll be on the net on www.dadsontheair.net. That should be up on the net in the next 24 hours or so. And stay tuned now for Country On with Country Bob, who's going to have this week's top 20 hits. Until next week.
We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads.